Welcome to Muffliato, a Harry Potter podcast where we fill your ears to prevent you from hearing nearby conversations. I'm Josh.
And I'm Blake, and today we put a down payment on the Shrieking Shack as we continue our journey through Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban and come now to the 14th chapter, Snape's Grudge. Josh, it seems like the Shrieking Shack might be on a bit of prime real estate, you know, slightly out in the countryside, just, you know, outside of Hogsmeade. Pretty good location.
Yeah, and I really do think that you have tons of options if you move out there. You know, you could really try and rehabilitate the shack's reputation. After all, it never really was haunted.
Yes, true. It's
Dumbledore and Lupin we have to thank for that. Or you could really embrace it and turn it into a bit of an attraction and make people pay for it, because it seems like people are really excited to visit it without having to pay.
Yeah, I know. It seems so random, right? Like, it's clearly built a strong reputation. Like, you know, even the villagers, like, nobody's been suspicious, being like, has anybody really like been possessed or attacked or anything? You know, like, there's just nothing going on. So you think, man, they would have questioned it by now. But hey, I mean, it was a pretty good ruse by Dumbledore to do that.
Oh, yeah. Very clever.
Maybe he owns the property, or maybe that's Hogwarts that owns
it. I never thought of Dumbledore as a real estate mogul, but maybe he is.
How great would that be? Yeah, he's like, yeah, I got some investments. I got some Hogsmeade, I got a shop that I lease out in Diagon Alley. You know, like, it's like, I can imagine Dumbledore being a little bit savvy with his financial investments.
I would love to see that.
Yeah, that'd be pretty good. I'm trying to think of the Shrieking Shack is one of those properties that you're like, you know, it would be a great place for someone who knows about the tunnel into Hogwarts, and you know, so maybe a teacher, you know, there's a shorter commute.
Yeah. Short commute, that's right.
Yeah, exactly. That would be my first idea. But, like, you know, a little sort of lick of paint. Like, what I want to see, Josh, is I want to see a magical HGTV.
Oh, how good.
Kind of come in and, you know,
property wizards
do this up. It's like, all right, you know, the property brothers, right? But they're the wizards, and they're flipping this house. And, you know, they've got to add that new nice hardwood flooring, a nice sort of open space, bright kitchen for all your, you know, magical treats you're making. So I think that would look pretty cool. And then invite all your friends over, you know?
Or maybe like extreme shack makeover.
Shack, yes. Oh, that's so good. What would it be? Move that bus.
Dragon.
And you're a dragon or the magical night
Move
bus.
That night bus.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so true. And it's like, okay, Erin, take it away. You know, and they're just like, you know, it moves, and then there's really the secret magician Ty, you know, ready to kind of curry up some sort of emotional response from, you know, people who haven't been, you know, they had the Shrieking Shack, but man, they fell ill and they were sick. But now that one kid who said he really liked the Chudley cannons now has a whole room emblazoned.
Your bed is a cannon.
Yeah, I can imagine doing that. Hey, like, if for some reason the Weasleys got, you know, the extreme makeover house edition, like, package, and then Ron was kind of like Ty, and it's like, I kind of, you know, I like the Chadley Cannons Quidditch team. It's like, all right, we're gonna roll with that, you know. And then it's just
Celestina Warbeck makes an appearance, just as like a celebrity guest star.
Yep, exactly. They all kind of come together to support the Weasleys, and there's some spin-off series
definitely.
But before we plan a whole series of another show that doesn't even exist, maybe we should bring it back. And Josh, you should give us what we see in this chapter.
Sounds good. As the Gryffindor students struggle to sleep, the teachers search the castle for any signs of Sirius Black. The search proves unsuccessful, and the next day is spent installing stricter security around the castle. Sir Cadogan's tenure as the portrait guard is over, and the fat lady returns to her post. As all entrances into the castle are closed, Ron and Harry debate whether or not they should report Harry's secret entrance to Honeydukes. Ron thoroughly enjoys his newfound celebrity status as an almost victim of Sirius Black. Hagrid invites Harry and Ron over for tea at his hut, and Ron expects that this is so that he will get to tell his story yet again. Instead, Hagrid is preparing for Buckbeak's trial, and they immediately feel guilty for their failure to keep their promise to help. However, Hagrid is more disappointed with the breakdown of their friendship with Hermione, and he admonishes them to repair it. Even with the recent attack by Sirius Black, Harry still plans to attend the Hogsmeade visit under the cover of his invisibility cloak and through the secret passage. However, en route, he is delayed by Neville and Professor Snape. Once he arrives in the village, he meets Ron, and together they visit a few shops before walking to the Shrieking Shack. There, they are confronted by Draco, Crabbe, and Goyle. Ron, appearing alone, faces insults and attacks from the Slytherins. Harry, still invisible, retaliates, but not without his cloak falling off of his head and exposing his face. Draco runs back to the castle and tells Snape that he has seen Harry in Hogsmeade. Harry denies any wrongdoing and confronts Snape about his prejudices about his dad. Snape retorts that James was nearly responsible for his death, but he panicked at the last minute. Harry is forced to empty his pockets, and Snape examines the Marauder's map. Unable to reveal its secrets, he calls Lupin to study the map. Lupin confiscates the map and, with Snape gone, tells Harry that he knows the creators of the map and that it isn't safe for him to have it. As Ron and Harry walk back to the tower, they see a dejected Hermione, who informs them that Buckbeak has been sentenced to die.
Coming back to the start of this sort of chapter, or around the start, where Ron clearly is thinking that the trip to Hagrid's hut is to kind of recount his tales. Like, oh, I love so cool. How excited Ron is by, like, you know, being this sort of having the popularity. All right, Hagrid, I'll tell you what happened, you know, kind of thing. Like, it's just, it's really great that he's assuming that that's why Hagrid, you know, wants it. It's like, no, I've already heard. And it's like, in that moment, Ron's probably just so defeated.
Just crushed.
Yeah, pretty much.
It's such a funny thing because, you know, throughout the series, there's such a desire for Ron and Harry to switch places, right? Like they both want each other's problems and successes. Like Ron looks at Harry and says, "Man, your problems are that you're too famous. I would love to have that as my problem." and Harry looks at Ron and says, "Man, your problem is that you have too much family. I'd love to have that."
That's a bit sad, eh? Like when you think about it coming from Harry's side, you think, yeah, that is really sad. You've got too much family. Like, I want that, you know, but
your problem is you have too much family and you're anonymous in your family. You know, it's I'd love to slip in and not be the most famous of my brothers even, right?
Yeah. I think he wants that normality, you know, he just wants the regular things, which is what a great, like, couple of characters, right? That each want, what a great sort of link between them, and a bit of tension there is that they each want what each other has, you know. No doubt, you know, Ron's not thinking he wants his parents to be dead. But it's the popularity that he wants. And you just think, yeah, sorry, Ron, but like, that's, you know, probably not going to happen. Even though, you know, unless you write some kind of Rita Skeeter, like, interviews you and she releases a whole book, "The Night That Sirius Black Nearly Stabbed Me." But, you know, the life and lives.
It sounds like one chapter at most.
Yeah, it's a blog post not really a book.
Maybe a tweet.
Yeah, that's so true. Yeah, it's not quite as eventful, you know, as being stabbed and, say, surviving, or eventually chasing after Sirius Black and, I don't know, Scabbers biting his whole hand off and you know, they get him and they finally take him into Azkaban. But yeah, there's not much story there except Ron, I feel like, would add some parts to it, right? Like,
the story really does get more and more impressive the more times Ron tells it, right? That's really the story of Ron's life, is that always the embellisher.
Yeah, and I think it was like a group of first years that he was telling as well, kind of thing. Yes. And he's just like, "And there I was, you know, holding the knife, like a dirty great knife," kind of thing. Yeah. And you're like, add all those details, Ron. Like, you just woke up and screamed in your bed, you know, that's all you did. But yeah, add the details. But when we're looking through this chapter, Josh, what is the key theme that we see?
Yeah, well, this chapter is really one of, instead of risk and reward, which would be maybe what we saw in Harry's first trip to Hogsmeade, this is risk and repercussion. Harry takes a significant risk, and we can talk more later about how, you know, Harry's actions really show he doesn't really get, he still doesn't get the danger that he's in. You know, but he's so willing to take these risks for such little reward, right? Well, what is the reward? They're not stopping Voldemort. They're not doing anything like that. No. They're having a day in Hogsmeade, and the repercussions are significant. He loses the map. And he also, misplaces for quite some time the invisibility cloak.
Yeah. Which is a pretty rough deal because you know, he loses it at the point where he probably, you know, it's always something that's good to keep on hand for any of those sort of emergency situations. But, you know, bye-bye invisibility cloak, you kind of, you really do slap your face thinking, why didn't you, you know, check the map and we're under the invisibility cloak. You could have got out before, like, Snape came around the corner and then he would have just been waiting in the hallway for nothing. But, yeah, that's pretty, I do love that, you know, he has a little bit of fun. Harry has a little bit of fun with, you know, Crabbe and Goyle and Malfoy. Like, I think that's pretty clever.
Yeah, that was. Yeah.
But it is something that, yeah, as soon as that, like, rope gets pulled down, his head's exposed, and, like, you know, Malfoy's like, you're like, oh no, this is bad, you know. And it's kind of like a race against the clock to see who can get back to Hogwarts first.
Yeah. No, you do feel that panic as they're, you know, they're going the different routes. You're thinking, oh, who's going to arrive back? But this is a pretty steep cost for one day, one, you know, afternoon or morning in Hogwarts. It's a
Hermione was right.
Suffer. Yeah,
I think Hermione was right that, like, they, you know, he shouldn't go. You know, when it comes down to all the information they had, you know, it's.
I mean, surprise, surprise, Hermione was right.
Yes, that's so true. It's not like it's that's a bad thing. It's like, no, Hermione, that should just be the standard. Hermione's right. Great, we should listen to it. You know, because it's going to pay off. We get that. I think as we've talked about Ron, and we move into character development, you know, this is something that as we've mentioned before. His family wanting that popularity, all of a sudden getting it. Everybody's wanting to kind of talk to him about, oh man, Sirius Black was over you. And it's all kind of, I guess, to the end, to put into a question into her mind, being like, well, why didn't he just kill me? You know, why didn't he just silence us all? Because he, you know, he could have. He was, you know, a so-called murderer of just innocent people. So it's like, why didn't he just silence all of us? And, you know, then it's the classic, oh no, but you know, here's why he didn't do that. Kind of a loose reason of having to, you know, wake the whole Gryffindor kind of tower and that sort of thing. When really, like, if he wanted to, he totally could have just gotten rid of them. But it's where we see, like, more, oh, maybe it's an accident. He went to Ron's bed rather than Harry's and all of that. But then when we look through that story again, we really see he's after the rat. He's after to Ron and Scabbers. Which you gotta think, man. If Scabbers was there, that would be you know, and looking up at Sirius Black, I think he would have did a little couple of rat poop pellets.
I was not expecting that, Blake. No, exactly right. And I think too, you know, the reputation is of Sirius Black as they know him is really starting to be called into question. You know, either this guy has no regard for life whatsoever and is willing to, you know, kill muggles upon muggles in his murder of Wormwood, like we're told, or maybe something else is going on. There really does seem like both of these things can't be true, it seems like.
Yeah, that's so true. And one thing that I noted about Severus Snape that we see, I mean, there's a few things, but I, you know, before Harry came along, he would have, you know, looked back on his past time at Hogwarts and, you know, not liked Harry's father at all. You know, why would he like James? But maybe not thought about him as much. But, you know, Harry's this constant reminder. But I think Snape wins when Draco Malfoy comes to school with Harry and they kind of form their little Hate Harry Potter club, you know, because it's like they're kind of like ganging up against him, right? Like anything that they can do together to sort of lift Draco up and bring Harry down, like that's what Snape will do. I think that's pretty fun. In a bad way, of course, but they kind of have this club where if Draco does something against Harry, there's like very little repercussions. You know, it's just there's probably nothing. It's more like a I need to do this for show, but really, you know, good on you, Draco. You know, Harry Potter deserves it, sort of thing. Which I don't know. It's just you think about that whole relationship between Severus and James, and then Harry, and you just think it's so sad that he ends up putting that hate on Harry, this completely different person than his father, even though he looks very similar, but like a person that didn't even know his father, right? Like didn't even know his experiences at school or anything like that, and who just died. And so So now, you know, obviously Harry is that reminder that, you know, Lily is dead, and that can be, that's hard. But yeah, it just feels like, come on, Severus, like surely you could have, I don't know, just been your normal angry self with all the other students with Harry, right? Like, you know, you didn't need to love him like Draco clearly, but, you know, just a general dislike.
Yeah, I do think as well that as we look at it, your observation of the similarities between, you know, Snape and Draco are really telling. It shows Snape's childish behavior, right? Like the rivalry between Harry and Draco makes sense. Like oh man, it's just kids being kids. But
yes,
but it really does show how much Snape needs to let it go in that. Yeah, he has held onto this for so long.
And when we look at the Marauders, I do love that we finally get the kind of the comments when Snape's trying to, you know, break into this map, you know, forcefully with, you know, external kind of magical power, and how they spit back kind of the voices of these Marauders, how that's kind of like part of the tool. Like, I love how, you know, back when they were creating it, they specifically created it to, like, if Snape were to ever find it, that they would be able to insult him, you know? Like, it's almost like Snape could have been suspicious of them. Like, they knew that Snape was suspicious right at the start. You know, we know that they led Snape down because he was, like, figuring out that that Lupin was a werewolf too, and they led him into that kind of prank situation, which could have killed him. I wonder if they were like, how do they not get caught? How do they, you know, and maybe he had an idea of their, you know, that maybe this map that they were making, and they were like, you know what, let's throw in a little sub clause to the map that if Snape ever tries to break in, he's insulted, because it's you know, greasy hair, it's all these childish kind of make fun comments, which you know, Snape obviously probably didn't like seeing, you know, his old nemeses were, you know, back at him again. And it was like he was a child in Hogwarts again, being made fun of.
Yeah. And I do wonder, you know, if just how deep this magic goes, you know, is this map able to insult anybody, or is it, you know, just for special cases like Snape? You know, that's a really interesting question. And I think too, when you consider the pranks of the Marauders, that I really feel bad for Lupin in that situation. You know, Lupin is obviously a werewolf at this point, where they're pulling this prank, and imagine waking, kind of, I don't know if waking up is the right word, but going back to your human state and realizing that you maimed or even killed somebody, right? Cool. Lupin is of those four, clearly the most sensitive to right and wrong.
Yeah.
And that would have been just horrible. It's, you know, it's equally a prank on Snape as it is on Lupin.
Yeah, definitely. That's a really good point, that, you know, he out of all four would have been the most destroyed if he brought harm to anyone. And that's why he was kind of in a way so against the things that they were doing, like going out and all that. But like, you know, the level of, you know, his desire to have friends and the sort of the enjoyment of actually being joyful, right? Rather than being sad that, you know, he has this affliction. It's like, you know, that just overpowered the safety. And I think that it is mentioned later on in this book that kind of is how he was feeling. Like he loved having friends, and it was good to finally have friends that stuck with him, even though they knew he was a werewolf, which is pretty crazy. Now, Josh, moving into world building, obviously the invisibility cloak is pretty sweet here. We kind of see it on full display for how I would probably like to use it if I was in school, you know, like Harry uses it for some rule breaking, some going out in the halls. And I think I probably would as well, with going to the kitchens and getting some sweet free food. But I love how he does some pranks, and I almost would love to see Harry do more of this around the Gryffindor common room, and to the point where like all the Gryffindors like are just sick of Harry, you know, being like, oh, Harry, come on, you know. But he'd be able to do some pretty fun stuff with this, like, you know, trip people up. But maybe that's just my evil side coming out, thinking how I could prank people. But mud to the face and kind of spooky stuff is a pretty good use near the Shrieking Shack.
Yeah, I do feel like that that would have been a bit more maybe how James used the the invisibility cloak.
So true.
You know, Harry uses it to to break rules in putting himself at risk a lot of the time. I feel like, you know, James would have used it more probably in between how we could imagine the Weasleys using it and Harry. Definitely a lot more laughs with James.
Yeah, I love it because it's maybe the first time that I've kind of thought of it in this way. It's a little bit weird, but like Harry Potter is this mix of his mom and his dad. That is a very basic statement, but like James and Lily, and you know, Lily was just like, you know, when we get that backstory into their relationship, and you know, she was kind of top student, very very proper, right? And probably exactly. Didn't break much rules, maybe similar in a way to Hermione, but I just, and so this mixture of Harry, like he gets the you know, the looks and stuff from James, but clearly maybe gets his sense from his mom. I mean, he gets a little bit of the stuff from James when it comes to rule breaking as a whole, but like it's usually for a purpose, like a pretty specific purpose that might aid in the kind of the helping of someone. But this is just he just wants to get Hogsmeade, and I love that you know, the pranks, the movie, it's pretty fun, you know, where they're just freaking out because the Shrieking Shack's there. It's kind of like, oh no, it's haunted, and everybody sort of freaks out about that. But yeah, invisibility cloak, pretty handy thing to have in your sort of in your trunk at the foot of your beard at Hogwarts for sort of mischief makers.
No doubt. And that, you know, that mischief obviously can take those different forms as you've mentioned. And Blake, we've talked about the Shrieking Shack already to some degree, and we'll really talk about it more later when we have all those chapters in the Shrieking Shack coming backwards and forwards and in and out later. But we do see that the Shrieking Shack is magically protected, no way of getting from the outside.
Yeah, definitely. It's all blocked off. Clearly, you know, Dumbledore had a hand in that, so I don't think anybody's getting in. So what do we see? Do we see much in the way of literary devices, Josh?
Not much in the way of literary devices, except for our Lupin tracker, which kind of goes along with foreshadowing, is we just learn more about his background. It's not so much Lupin as werewolf here, but we do see a slight indication of perhaps a or not an indication so much as a reminder that, you know, if our timelines are correct, that means that Lupin and Snape were at Hogwarts together as well, right? I don't think that connection has been made, you know, explicit, but when we see them interacting, that should cross our minds when we think about if Snape had a rivalry with James, he probably had a rivalry to some degree with Lupin. And then, most importantly, we see his familiarity with the Marauder's Map.
Yeah, and the authors, as he says.
That's exactly, yes.
I love it. He says, I know the authors, or, you know, you kind of think like, oh, that's pretty clever, you know, how to put that. Like, so you are one of the authors, but I guess you know the other three.
And with that, like, I think it's really important we don't, you know, gloss over what Lupin says about the potential danger for Harry. You know, if he has the Marauder's Map, he might see Sirius Black on the map and want to go after him. You know, Lupin isn't taking the map to protect Sirius at this point. He still thinks that Sirius Black is who everybody thinks he is. And so might be getting concerned that way.
Yeah, definitely. And at the end of the chapter, unfortunately, we get that sort of that final bit of information that Buckbeak is being sentenced to death. So kind of lost the case there. Makes Ron and Harry feel bad, especially that they weren't there helping Hermione with that case for Buckbeak. But that really is a significant part of this book, because it's a part of that whole time turner thing, you know, this is the mode of transport that Sirius Black and innocent Sirius Black is going to escape on. And it's that sort of interesting thing they need to work out when Dumbledore says, you know, you can save two lives, right? Like it's
two innocent lives. So
yeah, it's like, it's not just, you're like, what is that? You know, and it's like, it's Buckbeak as well. And I like that shows everything as well from Dumbledore being like, it was Malfoy's fault. You know, Buckbeak is innocent, right? It was Malfoy. He was probably being a silly boy kind of thing. And just a quick note before we wrap things up, we have actually received a few questions coming in via the website and email with questions that no doubt Josh and I will be putting into some bonus episodes coming up. And so if you do have any questions, please send them in, and maybe thoughts. We might have answered them. We might be able to steer you into the right direction of an older episode if we answer the question there. But otherwise, we would love to hear those questions, and you can send them to us via Instagram or email at muffliadopodcast@gmail.com. Use the form on the website as well, www.muffleautopodcast.com. And so to continue the adventure, join us next time as we discuss the 15th chapter of Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban, the Quidditch final.